Welcome to East West WLS, the podcast, where we support the bariatric community with humor, humility, and honesty. I'm April, and I'm the West.
And I'm Jason, and I'm the East.
Today, y'all, we have the honor of interviewing our friend, our social media guru, the one and only Miss Natalie, to celebrate her 1 year surge anniversary.
Yay! I'm so excited.
Girl's all grown up.
Oh my gosh, I just remember when we met you, you were like baby bariatric. I mean, you were fresh out of OCC.
Yeah.
Look at you now, girl.
Yeah.
Look at you now. Oh. So we have some maybe typical questions, and then we have maybe a little bit more of a deeper level questions, because we know this is not your first rodeo, and we are very excited to learn about how this 1 year is different from your other 1 years that you have experienced before. So we're so thankful that you are having this conversation with us. We know that there's probably millions of people that you could have had this conversation with, and we're just so thankful that you are our friend and that we get to share your story on the podcast, because that's very special.
Yes, I wouldn't want to have the conversation with anyone else.
Oh.
All right, friends. Well, should we just get right to it? Should we just dive right in?
Sure.
Let's do it.
Hey guys, this is April. Did you know that you can leave us a voice message with your feedback or a question right on our Anchor homepage, and we can incorporate it into the podcast? So cool. Head to anchor.fm/east to west WLS. Scroll down the page a little bit until you see the message button. Using your smartphone, click that button and leave us your feedback or a question, and we will drop it in an upcoming podcast episode. We're so excited to connect with you. Thank you for your continued support of East to West WLS. Okay, so first question, let's make sure everybody knows, when was your surgery date?
It was September 28th of 2020. Actually, kind of a funny story. It was supposed to be the 29th of September, but they... for those who don't know, I had my surgery done in Tijuana, Mexico at the Obesity Control Center. And I was just supposed to go in for my CT scan, and I got out of my CT scan and they said, okay, you're going to have surgery today. I was like,
oh my God.
Okay. All right.
Oh, ain't no thing. Whatevs.
Whatever, I guess.
God, well, thank God you rolled with the punches, because it turned out beautifully well, right? Like, no regrets there. Okay, so September 28th was your D-Day, so to speak, your third D-Day, and we will. But the first thing we want to ask you is, what are you feeling in this very moment? What are you feeling?
Yeah, I think I'm feeling a lot of just kind of surrealness. Like, I don't know how to explain it really, but just kind of like very reflective, very grateful. And just like, I can't believe how much has happened in 1 year, you know, looking back at who I was a year ago, I'm the same person, but I'm not. I've grown so much in the last year. And so just feeling very reflective. I'm a very nostalgic person. So I've been flipping through my stories, like archives, and just remembering, like today was, I was already in Mexico today, you know, like this time last year, I was in Mexico, had gotten my COVID test, blood drawn, and was just waiting, you know? So, yeah, lots of just like reflection.
That is crazy to me that you would say, oh, I had my COVID test. I can't believe that we have been living with COVID for that long. I mean, that is.
It's crazy. I was thinking about it because we were talking. I was talking about when I bought my office chair and how long it's been. And my wife was like, dude, that was like a year and a half ago. I was like, wait, what? I was like, we haven't been home that long. She was like, oh, but we have. And I'm like, oh, okay. I put the mask on and was like, damn, yeah, we have.
Well, you bring up such a good point, Natalie. Like, the people that we were before bariatric surgery are not really the people who we are today. And
before surgery or the day of surgery, you really can't imagine the person that you are going to become.
No.
And then on top of that, you have also dealt with, like, we've all had to become different people because of the global pandemic.
Yeah.
Right. And like everything has changed because of the pandemic. So not only do you have that change, now you're stacking on this grand complete reshuffling of who you are as a person on top of that. I mean, it's like this change sandwich that just keeps giving out condiments just left and right. Yeah. Oh my God. Mm-hmm. So do you remember, like, when you think back to like the day that you had surgery, what did you think your life was going to be like a year after surgery? Do you remember that?
I really truly had no idea. Like, I really, because my experiences in the past were so, I mean, I was very young. I was 15 through 18 at the time. And then to be an adult, to go through this now, I really just didn't have a clue. I was unemployed at the time. I didn't even have a career. I didn't have really a goal. I was honestly pretty depressed because of the pandemic and not having a job and not really feeling like I had a, to be quite frank, that I didn't have a purpose. I'm very career oriented. I like to have like a reason to get up every day, and to, thankfully I kind of focused that energy into Instagram, but I mean, I didn't have like a real idea of anything that would come from it. I just knew I was doing this to be healthy. And if I could be healthy, then that was good enough for me at the time.
Well, and if you think about it, like, we struggle so much with stalls in the surgery game part, you were in a much greater stall of sorts with life as a whole. Like, you, so that is a monumental stall in itself, because at least with the weight, you know, it's going to keep moving eventually if you stay the course and do the right things. With the rest of that stall, you had no idea what things were coming, because you had no prospects even really to think about. You weren't really, didn't have any applications out. You didn't have any feelers out. Nobody was calling for jobs. Like, the way, the uncertainty of the world at the time, that, I mean, there was really nobody knew kind of what to do from, you know, from one day to the next. So exactly. That's something completely different to add on top of everything going on with the surgery. So the fact that you were able to turn that around is monumental.
Thank you for that. Cause yeah, I lost my job in March of 2020, literally days after the world shut down. You know, had 1 month of income, which was pretty small at that. And to think, oh my gosh, I'm 27 and I have to be on unemployment. Like, that's a blow to your esteem. To, you know, my grandma was going through health issues. And yeah, I mean, I had nothing at that point. I was like, well, I guess I'm just floating for a while, you know?
Wow. Well, and Jason, that's such a good point, but you are so correct. I mean, not only are we, can we stall out in our bariatric journey, but we can stall out in our life. And when we are at that low point, it really defines who we are moving forward. And I got to say, Nat, when Jason and I met you, we did not know that you were in such a dark place. I mean, maybe dark isn't the right word, but we didn't know that you were in like the valley of your life at that time. You didn't portray that. You could have been very negative. You could have been just, you could have been a completely different person, but you were, you didn't present that to us. You didn't present that to the bariatric community. You had this aura about you. You had this determination that was really, for some reason, it just wasn't seen to us. I mean, we discovered these things. We discovered the valley when as we really got to know you as a person and as a friend. Shit, your perseverance and your outlook is very different from the situations that you were presented with. That strength is phenomenal, phenomenal.
Yeah. I have many women in my life to thank for that.
Strong, right? Behind every strong woman is another strong woman, right? Isn't that how the saying goes?
Something like that. I was very lucky. I had a lot of very strong women who taught me the resilience. My mom was a single mom when she had me. She was living with her parents, you know, and you just do what you got to do sometimes. And you can be sad about it. You can cry. Trust me, I cried more in 2020 than I think I've ever cried in my entire life. But like, there's a meme and it says, are you going to cry about it or are you going to boss up? And it says, first of all, I'm going to do both.
Well, I mean, but if you think about it, there's two ways you could do it. You can either cry to cry, or you can cry as an outlet to build the strength back up to move forward. And that's exactly what you did. Like, yeah, but you also took it in the vein of you weren't going to let anybody see that part of you. You took that to yourself. You had your time. You regrouped, you came back, you hit even harder than you were knocked down, and you built back up to what you are now. Not only have you had one successful job, now you've had two successful jobs, and you've helped us build East to West into what it is now, because we've said before, and we will continue to say forever, that we wouldn't be where we are today without you and what you've done for us. So being able to handle not only your career, but helping us do what we do and also thriving in your personal life just shows the type of person that you are, and that it is okay to cry. It is okay to think, you know, horrible things like that, because at the end of the day, it's not about that you cried. It's what you did with those tears and what you used that, you know, that feeling to do. It either propels you forward or you can drown in those tears and just stay in the pits of despair. You chose not to do that, and that's amazing.
That drowning metaphor just really kind of hit me, right? Because you're so true, Jason. Either our tears can place us on a river and propel us out of that spot, or we can drown in them. Mm-hmm. And you chose to use it as a gateway out. And I mean, what a life you have built for yourself, and like what a support you are for our community. I mean, it's just like, to do those things. But I mean, you've learned a lot, because this is your third time going through this.
It is. Yeah.
Right. So, you know, that's the other thing that we really want to know. How is this 1 year different from your other 1 years? Because you've had two other 1 years in your past when it comes to bariatric surgery.
Yeah. So for those who don't know, I had the lap band done when I was 15. I had it done. I still remember the day. It was August 22nd, 2009, which is forever ago. And I said 2009.
Which sounds crazy to say. Mm-hmm. Which I said, that just sounds crazy to say that 2009 was so forever ago, because I'm like, but no, not really.
Yeah, I guess not really, but I just remember the next year I had lost over 100 pounds. I lost my weight very quickly with the lap band, which at the time was great, right? Like I had done really well. I mean, I was very young, so I feel like that also played a part in that. But I think around that time, like the year after in 2010, was one of my half siblings' wedding, and I was one of the bridesmaids. And so I remember feeling very proud of myself because I was thin. I could wear a beautiful dress and buy shoes that fit, and felt very excited and happy that I could present myself in that way. However, looking back, I was not very healthy. I had developed, you know, eating disorders and things like that from not being educated on how to be a successful bariatric patient. So I remember that being, I guess bittersweet is the best way to put it. I remember not feeling great because I was very deficient in things. But I remember also at the same time, I was 16, I felt great, I just felt awesome. Like I felt very confident in myself, and like I was finally presenting myself in a way that felt like myself. Mm-hmm. As far as the plication goes, I had to have the lap band taken out later that year. So I was 17, had to have it taken out because of complications. For those who don't know, a very common complication is that the band will slip and start to erode at your stomach. And I became septic and they had to take out my lap band. Worst day of my life was when I had to have that taken out. I remember just being like, no, put it back in when I'm healed. I remember like yelling at the surgeon to not take it out.
Oh my God.
So that was traumatic. So the next year after that, I remember telling my mom like, hey, I'm gaining weight. Like, I don't want to gain weight anymore. Like, I'm happy where I am. I had gained enough weight to be like healthy at that point. Like, I was like, oh, okay. I had gained probably 40 pounds and I was like, this is comfortable. Like, I want to stay here forever. And so I had the, it's called a plication. And it's essentially like a pseudo sleeve, as I call it. They accordion your stomach and then they suture so that it's reversible eventually. And they thought, you know, this will be a great option. This will just help you kind of maintain your weight. And so I had that done, in November of 2011. And then I just remember not really feeling anything, like not really feeling different, no restriction. So to be honest, I never even celebrated a 1 year because there was just no point to me. Like, there was nothing to celebrate.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Because it just, I started gaining weight back and then I had to start the fad dieting again, you know, and what's the point in celebrating something that doesn't even work, you know? Mm-hmm. So, very all over the place with my 1 years because of that.
Yeah. Well, and it really kind of sounds like you knew even at that very young age that the lap band and the plication were, that was not the answer that you were looking for. You knew right. that there was something else out there. You just didn't know what it was.
Yeah. I think I knew that I needed help. Like, I needed a tool.
Yeah.
But the way that my specific surgeon was going about it wasn't right and wasn't what I needed. So it was like, okay, I'm trying all these tools. Why aren't these tools freaking doing their jobs, you know?
Yes.
But I didn't know that because, I mean, this is, again, over 10 years ago, no one needed all of the support. No one knew that you needed to get labs done and check in with your doctor and surgeon and have a nutritionist and go to support groups. And like, no one knew that we needed all of that. So it was, yeah, it was kind of like, okay, I have this thing.
Yeah.
What? Yes. Hello? Like, why is it working now? Like, is this thing on? And so, yeah, it just kind of felt like, okay, well, maybe. And then, you know, years later, I got into thinking, well, maybe I just need gastric bypass because obviously, like, these two things aren't working. So I need to go to the extreme, like the pinnacle extreme.
Yeah.
And thankfully, it was hard at the time, but I got denied twice by my insurance. And in a way, I'm kind of grateful for that, even though it's really sucked at the time. But
Oh God. I mean, well, all three of us talk to people every day in our community that are fighting the insurance battle. And it's brutal. It's brutal because you're so hopeful. You know that this will help you.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
To continue to get denied for stupid reasons is just, you want to bang your head against the wall.
Yeah.
So, I mean, are you to the place now where you believe that you can live at your weight for the rest of your life? Have you kind of arrived to this place where you believe in the evidence that you've been shown? Because you've had tremendous success with your sleeve.
Yeah, I feel like I am almost there. I feel like I'm not quite there yet. I am sitting at about 260, which is like about 140 down from my highest weight. But I would like to see myself in the 220s. I feel like, you know, maybe down to like the 210s. But I feel like I still have some work to do. And I'm not quite at my happy, healthy weight. I still feel kind of clunky in some spots. And, you know, like I'm not, I don't feel totally like, oh, look at me, like, let me wear all the tight things. You know, I'm still like, oh, I still have a belly. And like, I kind of want to get rid of that. And, mm-hmm. you know, so I'm not yes. quite there, but I'm almost there.
That's really exciting, right? Because I think we all want to get to the place where we finally have the evidence to just say, okay, I don't have to doubt this anymore, right? Like, if I just continue to do this, I've got all the tools, I understand so much, right? Recognizing there's still going to be stumbles and setbacks, I'm going to learn new things, but just to kind of have all of that fear not hanging on you anymore,
yeah,
is a really glorious feeling. I mean, I'm there. Jason, I think, are you there?
I'm kind of with Nat. I've got about 40 I'd like to drop. If I don't, I'm okay. But I really, honestly, if I don't get to 40, it's like 45. If I don't get to 45 off, I'd be happy with probably another 20 down.
Okay.
But I'm close. I mean, like, if I don't lose anymore, I'm not going to consider myself a failure. I just have a little bit more belly than I'd like.
Same.
Well, I think we're all there, but it's not necessarily about the weight, right? It's about believing that you can do it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right. It's about having that unwavering faith that it's like, nope, this is going to work for me for the rest of my life.
Yeah.
That's right. I think that's the point that we all want to get to, even though we're not, you know, I don't know if anybody's ever happy with their number, but it's right. Not having well, that fear.
And mine's not even technically a number. Mine's more of a shape. Like, I don't even know if 20 pounds would do what I want it to do. I just want a little less. Like, I feel bloated lately, but I don't know if it's because of the intake of water, the extra 24 ounces of water that I'm drinking that I haven't really started releasing yet. So I think I've got some water weight on me that I need to drop off. But past that, I think that's really kind of what it is right now.
Yeah, I think I've kind of been in that headspace, April, where I'm like, this will work for me, because I am very lucky. Dr. Ortiz was very confident from the get-go. I say this all the time. He called me personally to discuss my history. And I will never forget him at the end of that phone call just saying, it'll work. Like, he just flat out said, this will work.
Yeah.
And from that point, I was like, okay, cool. Like, it's going to work. And I think part of me, I talk about manifestation a lot as well. I think part of me just manifested, it's going to work. Like, this is my third surgery. I don't want to do it again. Like, come on. Like, you know, I don't want to have to keep going back to these extreme measures. I want this to work. It has to work. And I kind of just always had that mentality from the moment I started my pre-op diet, because this is my third surgery. I said, it just is working. It will work.
Yeah.
It has to work.
I was that way too, because when they told me, they were like, yeah, we can do this and this. And then if that ends up not working, you know, we can always come back and do a revision. And I was like, no, this is the way we're one shot done here. If I don't lose enough, I'm wherever I land. Like, I'm good.
Yeah. Well, and I think, you know, it's hard for us to really truly understand that we are what we think. We become what we think. And if we go into this and we just say, this will work, there is no other thought up there, we really can learn to grow into that thought. Even if we don't 100% believe it right away, the power of what we say to ourselves is really what we become. And the fact that you were just, from the very beginning, you just said, nope, this will work. This will work.
I lost 50 pounds in 3 months on my pre-op diet. Yeah. I never lost 50 pounds by myself ever.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
mm-hmm.
And that was we talk about mindset all the time. That was me just saying, this is going to work. Like, this is, there's no wiggle room this time. Like, they want me to lose 50 pounds. I don't want to get to Mexico, all the way to Mexico, and then have them weigh me and be like, nope.
Mm-hmm.
But no. Then what? You know what I mean? Like,
it hits a little different when there's something on the line that big. So you really give it your all.
buying a plane ticket for me and my mom. You know, I'd already put down a $500 deposit. Dr. Ortiz has invested time, you know, it was just so many things on top of my health that were important, that were coming into play. And I just thought, I can't fuck it up. Like, I can't not do this right now. And so I think that just kind of carried into my surgery, you know, it just was like, okay, well, this is what my life is now, and it's going to work for me. And that's the end of it.
Yep. Yeah. And you've lived that since the moment you woke up at OCC.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah.
So what has been easier than what you in this year?
I think for me, since the beginning, fluids have always been very easy for me to get in. I remember kind of panicking a little bit at the beginning because I was like, I'm drinking like 80 ounces a day. Like, I just remember being like, am I okay? Like, you know, did I break something? Or, you know, I just remember from the get-go drinking all of my fluids, and protein was more difficult for me from the beginning. I did not like protein drinks, any like protein shakes. Towards the end, I got really tired of broth. So it was really hard for me to find my protein. But as far as like liquids went, and still today, I can still get over 100 ounces a day easily. And that's just how I've always been. And I'm very thankful for that because your girl's not dehydrated. Let me tell you that much.
I remember thinking that too, because they were like, you get these ounces in, and I'm like, boom, take it out. And I was always, I could take all my pills at once. Cause I remember them telling me like, well, some people have a really hard time with pills. I'm like, dude, I take like 8 pills in the morning. That's my routine. Like, I have to. And they were like, they take you half a day. And I'm like, what? Because I heard people like, oh, I'm so full, like I ate a meal from taking my pills. And I'm like, I don't have time for all that shit. Like, even blood pressure, like I got to take these like ASAP so I don't, you know, AFib out sitting here trying to work. But yeah, I remember the first time I was taking like one at a time, like a little bitty. And I'm like, oh, I can do this. And so I was the next day, I was like, bam, slammed them all. It was just like, so I thought the same thing. I was like, I don't know if this is supposed to be like this, but I'm not going to say anything for a while. So I'm going to see what happens.
For me, the first 2 days the first 36 hours was really difficult. I had a lot of inflammation around like the top of my stomach. So fluids were very difficult. And then, you know, I went in the next day for like my little checkup or whatever. And they're like, how are you doing? And I was like, well, I'm actually like, I am struggling, you know, like I take a sip and it just sits there and then I have to get up. I have to like shoot up and walk around for it to go down. And they gave me like some kind of shot, anti-inflammatory shot. And literally by the end of the day, I was getting in my water and I was like, was that like a magic shot that I just got like from Mexico, you know? but it helped. And then, you know, they called my room the next day. They said, how are your fluids? And I'm like, they're just going down. So, and they're like, great, cool. Mm-hmm. Keep doing it. You know, keep it up. So fluids for me, I'm very fortunate and I'm very happy that I can get my water down, get my fluids down. I come from a water drinking family, so I don't have any issues with that.
So the flip side to that question is, what has been more difficult than what you expected?
A couple things. I would say the number one is my medications, my mental, like anxiety, depression, ADD meds, I'm still battling with trying to figure out the right dosages, and people don't talk about that. I'm really struggling to take medications. They upset my stomach, but I need them. So I'm trying to balance. It's all so scientific, you know, they're like, try taking this one at this time and then this one at this time. And it's just been that part for me has been very overwhelming. So my mood has been very up and down this year because we're just like shifting so many things. People, that was something I just didn't even think about until I was on the other side. tried to take a medication and was like, felt blasted mentally. It was very odd. So that's really the main one for me, because I'm still dealing with it. Like a year later, I'm still struggling to find something that works.
Well, but I mean, as your body changes, your chemistry changes, you know, your weight impacts what medications do. So, you know, you're almost never stable in these first couple of years after surgery. So it would kind of make sense that, yeah, like your medications are not going to be stable, but when you depend on them for your functionality, that's infuriating, I would imagine.
Yeah. I mean, especially anxiety and depression medications. I mean, ADD, I've managed before. I've gone 20 years without anything. So it's like, I know how to manage that, but like anxiety and depression really have a mind of their own. Mm-hmm. And both of those medications upset my stomach. Like I get nauseous and dizzy to the point of like not functioning literally 20 minutes after I take them. And so now we're trying this new thing where I take them at night. And I'm like, yeah, but then what if I like get anxious during the day? Am I just going to have to sit and be nauseous and dizzy? You know, it's like, that's not fair because my anxiety medication is as needed, but I do take it regularly. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I'm like, what if I have a panic attack? And then, so I come down from this panic attack and then I am nauseous. Like that sucks. And I actually had a really bad panic attack. You that follow me probably remember, but I had a panic attack about eating an egg. And I talk about this a lot. I was starting my soft foods and I thought, oh, today's the day I get to eat my egg. And I remember kind of slowly waking up. And then I got up to like poach this egg, as per my father's instructions and, was boiling the water and just instantly melted down, like instantly had a panic attack, like full on shaking, had to lie down, was sobbing. Oh, and wow. I was still 2 weeks out and they were like, if you can stay off of them, like that would be great. Okay. Well, I can't obviously because I just had a major panic attack. And so that was when I realized, okay, I really have to get this under control because this is only, you know, 3 weeks in and I'm having this huge feeling towards an egg. Like, what else am I gonna feel? It was probably one of the worst panic attacks I've ever had. I mean, I had like sore muscles for 3 days after, like couldn't use my hands, sore. And so I obviously don't want to get to that point again. So yeah, just dealing with the medications and the mental aspect has been way harder than I ever thought it would be, ever. And no one talks about it because it's hard. And I understand that, but you know, doctors also need to talk about it. They need to do better.
Right.
Yeah.
I think so many of us go into our procedures thinking that it's magically going to make all of our other medical things disappear, right? Where it's just like, oh, I'm going to have surgery. I'm going to drop a bunch of weight instantly. And then I'm going to be absolutely healthy and not need anything. And that's just not the case for most people. I mean, you are taking months, sometimes years to get to the place where you can either forgo that medication or you still need it, but you're healthier, but you still need that medication to help you live. And that can be a real kind of gut punch, I think, to a lot of people. And it exists in the physical, you know, issues, and it exists in the as well. So the fact that you're so open to talking about it is really powerful for our community.
Yeah. People who follow me, again, they'll know I get really pissed off that we don't talk about this. Like I get really upset because this is the stuff that matters, that it's the stuff that actually carries on into the rest of our lives. And if we don't talk about it, then, you know, what's the point?
Really. It's because you know you're not alone and you don't want anybody else to suffer and feel like you do, especially with something as important as anxiety and depression. And we talk, you know, relentlessly about the mental health aspect of this thing. And, you know, the mental health aspect is hard enough for somebody who does not take anti-anxiety or, you know, antidepressants or things like that. So Exactly. Imagine adding that on top of, you know, everything else, and then going, oh, you know, you can take your meds, but they're going to make you sick. Ha ha ha. It's like, oh, you're depressed. Right, well, take this, and now you're going to be sick about it. Like, yeah, you'll be depressed and sick. Ah. And it's like, well, you know, somebody needs to come out and think, well, this sucks. You know, there's got to be a better way. And they've got to develop something, whether it's a patch or an extended release, a slow, you know, whatever they do, they've got to come up with something that's going to be able to help people get past this kind of thing with the proper medications. You can't just tell somebody, oh, well, I guess you're just not going to be able to take it. Like, you can only be depressed in your dreams, so take it before you go to bed. Like, yeah, I don't even care how that works.
The funny thing, too, is that I take extended release, but the way that our tummies digest it doesn't make it extended release. I could go on forever, but essentially it's called SSRI poisoning because it shoots up to your brain and it actually can make you very sick. I'm very lucky that it hasn't actually hurt me, but it is actually like, I called my doctor being like, I feel I'm in bed and I can't open my eyes because I'm so dizzy. And she said, you need to stop taking that immediately.
Oh my God.
It's like extended release. Did you say 12 hours? How about 12 minutes? Bam.
Yeah. Like literally 20 minutes. I was like doing something and I was like just instant, like, whoa. Like I felt just like a whoosh come over my body and I was instantly nauseous, instantly dizzy. And I called my doctor and I said, what is going on? And she's like, you need to not take it until we can talk and figure it out. So it is very thing. If you are pre-op, please talk to your doctor about planning the next, you know, 4 months, 4 to 6 months of your medication. Because I did not, and I didn't know I needed to.
Those are the two worst things to instantly be, dizzy and nauseous.
Yeah. Yeah. Jeez. And to have your doctor say, stop taking that immediately, I was like, oh,
This is not what I wanted to hear from my doctor.
I thought she was like, just lay down, it'll be fine. It was like, she was like, cut it off. And I was like, okay.
Oh my God. Yeah. Oh my God. Well, so you've had some things easier, you've had some things harder than what you thought. Are you where you thought you would be at your 1 year mark?
Honestly, no. I thought I would have dropped more weight than I have. I have been through two pretty major stalls that also no one really prepares you for as a pediatric patient. And so I don't think that I am, I don't want to say I'm not proud of where I am because obviously I've lost an immense amount of weight. That's huge. But I feel kind of like when I take pictures, I'm still kind of like, man, like just a little bit of like a, oh, and I think that's normal. You know, our bodies are changing. I was just talking to someone today about it and, you know, so much has happened in the last year with my body and we think we know what our bodies look like when we lose weight, but we really don't. And so when you're having to like look in the mirror and say, okay, I still kind of have flabby thigh, like big thighs, and I still kind of have a tummy, that kind of sucks. Like, it's okay to be like, that kind of sucks. Like that, it's not what I really want. I still am proud of myself because I've lost all this weight. I'm still making all of these changes, but I don't really feel like physically I'm where I thought I would be. I think I thought, oh, I'd be a, you know, I think I thought I would be at like at least 250. So, which I'm only 10 pounds away from. It's not a big deal, but like, you know what I mean? We get in that headspace of like, oh, this number.
Yes. Well, and I don't think there's a single bariatric patient out there that would answer any different from what you just said. We have these grand ideas, you know, we look at people, you know, in the social media world and we want to base our progress off of them. And it is just absolutely not realistic because as you said, you get into your journey And you realize this is way harder than what I thought it would be. This is not what I thought it would be at all. I wasn't anticipating all these things that came my way. So there's the plan, and then there's what happens. And it's how we confront the what happens that makes the difference. One of us posted it, but it's one of my favorite things. We can be progress and perfection at the same time. Yeah. We can acknowledge that I am so happy with where I'm at, and I still have work to do. Those two things are not mutually exclusive. And I feel like you just really eloquently demonstrated how we can live in that space. We can be proud, and we can be looking towards making more gains in the future.
Yeah. Yeah, I think I thought I would be more rigid in my workout routine, you know, but it's honestly been more fun for me to experiment and figure out new things than just be like rigid in what I'm doing all the time. Like, you know, April's gotten to experience me kayaking a couple times this summer.
Yes.
And, hey, that was really cool. Maybe I'd like to, you know, rent kayaks more often and like go do this more often. So it's been a little, it's just been different, you know, different than what I thought it would be, all around in every aspect.
Well, and we tell people that a lot too, though. Movement can look a lot of different ways. You know, kayaking was movement for you that day. Today, my movement was mowing the yard. Like, I mowed the whole thing, did all the steps and all the things it took it to do that. So, I mean, that's the beauty of this journey, is it doesn't have to be so rigid. It can be fluid, because as long as you're doing above and beyond what you would do on a normal day, that's your movement. Like, it, you know, yeah, it can look a ton of different ways, because a lot of people get tired of doing the same thing over and over again and having the same set of routine. That works great for some people, but for some people, they need the variety. And so the fact that you were able to kind of turn it into that really shows that you're doing a lot more of the work than you thought.
Yeah.
Well, and you know, some people are very much drawn to movement. Other people are not. And what's so important about movement is that we have to understand it's not necessarily related to our weight, right? We have that, we say it all the time at East to West, right? Fitness happens at the gym. Weight loss happens in the kitchen. And sometimes you don't have the capacity to focus on both of those things at the same time. Right? If we want to find a happy, healthy weight, it's all about what we consume. If we want to live a long life that's fulfilling and one that we can actually, you know, move in, then movement is something that we need to do. And if we don't have the capacity to do both, we don't, and we can't beat ourselves up over that. But I love your approach of, you know, this is fun. I get to experiment. I get to really do things that I'm drawn to do. It makes movement fun. Whereas before surgery, we might have treated movement as a punishment instead of a celebration of what our bodies can do. So.
And I will say, I'm more consistent in like taking my dog Hooper for a walk, you know?
Oh yes.
Jason, no. 4:30, 5 o'clock is Hooper time. Like, mm-hmm. I gotta go outside. I gotta go for at least half an hour, you know, and that's, I guess I've been rigid in that sense, but it's also just fun for me. I'm enjoying like walking around my neighborhood. I live in a very beautiful part of Seattle where we have very old houses and old gardens. And so it's been fun for me to kind of reignite my love for like being outside, just walking. That's something my grandma loved to do also. We would go on walks a lot. So it's nice to have those moments of clarity, like I said, either not listening to anything or throwing a podcast on or, you know, something mm-hmm. just to unwind and get that movement in, but in a way that I enjoy and is fluid, as you said, Jason.
Oh, friend. All right. We got one more question for you before we wrap up this amazing conversation. What are your intentions or what are your goals? What's your plan for your second year?
Yeah, I think one of my main goals is to become more active. I would like to, by next summer, start hiking for real. I've been slowly gathering little bits and pieces. I have some like hiking poles and I have a little hiking backpack. And so I think my goal is one of my stepsisters, she told me that she's a very avid hiker. She's a boss. I love her so much. She hikes all the time. And she says during the winter, when it's hard to get outside, she goes on the stair climber to train.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. And she does it in her hiking boots so that her feet keep their kind of form, I guess.
So smart.
Yeah. So I'd like to, I have hiking boots on my birthday and Christmas wish list. And then, yeah, that's my main goal, is to use the winter months to train so that I can build up some endurance and start hiking, because Washington is beautiful and I've lived here for so many years and I feel like I just don't even know what views lie in store. I've never seen it from that perspective. So that is my main goal. I guess my sub goal is to lose the last little bit that I would like to lose. And I guess just continue to do that by, you know, working on what we talk about all the time, the mindset, movement, metabolic wellness, and just being consistent and continuing to learn. But yeah, those are my two, like, okay, we got to do this. Like we have to make this work, you know? So that's hopefully by next July, I will be in the mountains and hiking with Hooper. I got to get him in shape too, because he needs to be my buddy when we're hiking.
Well, I would love to join you on those hikes. And if we can convince Jason to take the very short flight from Florida to Seattle, he should be joining us as well. Just a hop, skip, mountain range, rivers.
I will say that I see it in my future this summer to take at least one trip out there for you guys.
Oh, y'all heard it here first.
I'm gonna do everything I can to line it up to be able to come out there and hang out with you guys for some time. So we'll see.
Oh, as it should be. Well, now we know that when you put your mind to anything, it gets done. So we know that you will achieve these goals. We also know how difficult it is. We are living the struggle with you, and we are here to root you on and support you in any way that we can.
Oh, you guys are the best. I love having these talks with you guys. I always feel so much better. So
we all do. We always leave them. We always leave them feeling uplifted and inspired. So Nat, you are a very special guest today. And you know, we always like to give our guests the floor at the end. Is there anything that you felt left unsaid, or is there any piece of advice or wisdom that you would like to pass on to somebody who's maybe thinking about having bariatric surgery, is where you're at, or is maybe further along?
I think I just want to tell anyone who has felt discouraged, maybe, in whatever way, I don't know. There are many ways to feel discouraged, but if you are feeling discouraged, like maybe this isn't for you, I encourage you to continue to press on, because you can't give up. So just continue to do it, continue to push. It will happen. I mean, I waited over 10 years and it happened. So just keep going, keep persevering, keep pushing, cry if you have to, and then just wipe those tears and get back up, because it'll be worth it in the end.
Friend, you are amazing. I just need to say that for the 18th billionth time.
Absolutely amazing.
We love you. We love everything about you. We love your tenacity. We love your grit. And we love your commitment to this community. And we love that you are east to west. I mean, there's no other way to say it. You are making monumental impacts in this community, and we're honored to call you a friend.
Absolutely.
Same here.
All right, Jason, my friend, you want to take us out?
Yes, ma'am. Thank you again, Natalie, for joining us. It's always a pleasure when we get to see it from this side of things. It's a little less work, a little more fun, so we appreciate that, definitely. And just appreciate everybody for liking, sharing, subscribing, continuing to do what you do to support us, because it helps us support you. Please don't forget to leave us reviews on YouTube, on your favorite podcast player. You can also leave us voice messages on Anchor that we can actually incorporate into the episodes of the podcast, which is awesome. And we love getting those. And past that, just remember that you've got this, we've got you, and we'll see you next time.
Awesome. Thanks, guys. Congrats, Nat. Woohoo, 1 year.
Yes, congrats.